The following's intended solely for the use of those with a sense of adventure.
I'm shaking the dust of this town off my feet, and I'm going to see the world.
This is Travel with Hawkeye. Here's your host, Mark Hawkeye Lewis.
I had so much fun putting this episode together. We do 50 a year, so you kind of forget about some of the great times you had when you're doing so many episodes in a year. But in this particular episode, we're going to go back to some of our favorite moments. And some things that didn't make it on the air because a handler may have turned off the phone or said, we're done here. We'll play a little clip from that from one of the celebrities we talked to. Also, some unusual travel tips from different celebrities. We'll talk to Jack Osbourne on this episode here. Recall his dad, Ozzy Osbourne, peeing on the Alamo and the story behind that, the true story behind that. And it's actually funnier than we ever imagined. Also, one of my favorite moments of the year, we had Jennifer Beals on and we gave her a travel tip and she was so excited about it, she couldn't wait to get off the phone. She started Googling about it while we were conducting the interview. We'll hear from her. Also, we'll talk to some of our favorite travel hosts, or we should say we already talked to them, obviously, but then we'll go back like Rick Steves and Samantha Brown, how they got their start as a hosting on the Travel Channel, and also some of my favorite interviews of 2018. We'll all delve into that on today's podcast. We're going to start with one of my favorite actresses, Academy Award-winning actress Helen Mirren was on the Travel with Hawkeye podcast in 2018, and she gave us a travel tip that I had read about and I thought wasn't true, but I had to ask her before I let her go if this is actually something that she does when she travels. It's kind of genius. So here's Helen Mirren. Before I let you go, I read one thing, too, and I wanted to ask you this. It said, when you travel, you don't pack anything but underwear, and you buy all your clothes at a thrift shop as soon as you get to your destination.
Well, it depends where I'm going. If I'm going to a very cold place, and I'm not only going to be there for a couple of weeks, yes, I do that. Because, you know, when you're somewhere very cold, everybody looks the same. They're all wearing their duvet, you know, with big boots. There's no fashion going on at all in a very cold place. So, yes, I go to a thrift store. I buy the boots. I buy the gloves. I buy the hat. I buy the coat. And then when I leave, I go back to the thrift store and I give it all back again. Because that stuff is so big, bulky to carry, you know, it's like hard. So I can walk into a cold place with a really small suitcase.
Has anybody ever said when you were walked into a thrift store, like, oh my gosh, is that Helen Mirren coming into this thrift store?
They probably do, but I judiciously ignore them and get on with what I got to do.
That's Helen Mirren from episode 51 of Travel with Hawkeye. We also had Jennifer Beals. You know her from Flashdance, The L Word, many, many great projects. One of our most listened to episodes of 2018, and of course we're talking travel, and I asked her the one place, the one trip that she went to that was the most memorable, and it kind of went off in a totally different tact. And check out what happened here with Jennifer Beals from episode 54 of Travel with Hawkeye.
India. Yeah, I love that. I would love to go back.
What all did you do when you were in India?
What did I do when I went to India?
Yeah, what was did you go to the temple? I got to ask you this. My parents went to India, and they went to the Temple of the Rats, and they said that was one of the highlights of their trip. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Wow, no, I've never been there.
You've never been to the Temple of the Rats?
Where is that?
I want you, when you get off the phone with me, I want you to Google the Temple of the Rats, okay? Because it's a temple in India where the rats are considered sacred, so they just run around like at your feet.
Wow, okay. So is that like the rat as the consort, or not the consort, but the vehicle of like Ganesha? Or what is the connection, I'm wondering?
I think they're reincarnated spirits is, I think, what the rats are. And I may be totally wrong on that either. I'm taking kind of an educated guess from what my parents told me.
But you weren't there.
No, my parents went.
I'm looking it up.
Oh, you're looking it up as we speak. As we speak now.
Yes. A Hindu temple dedicated to Karni Mata. It's also the temple of rats. Wow, that's so interesting. No, I've never been there.
And you see how many rats. I mean, there are. It's not just one or two rats. I mean, they're everywhere.
Oh, no. Like a lot of rats.
Yes.
I don't know. I say I'm not that scared of rats, but I kind of remember living in New York and a gigantic rat crossing the street and not being really happy about it. Not that I jumped, but I thought, well, I don't know if I would want to be in an entire temple of rats, but I don't know. I guess these are blessed rats. It says that there are 20,000 rats.
Yes.
More than 20,000 rats.
Okay, now you have said just a moment ago that you would like to go back to India. Do you think that this would be on your list now to go to this temple?
Well, I'm kind of curious. It's not the first thing on my list. I'm not going to lie. But it's something. My gosh, I'd never heard of it. It's so funny. It's in Rajasthan, so it's in the north. See, I didn't get to the north. That was it. And I wanted to go to the north, and I want to go to Ladakh. That's really, really, really where I want to go.
What is special about Ladakh?
I don't. It's really far north, and it's very mountainous, and the temples look really beautiful. And it feels, I don't know how to explain it, but it feels like home. I don't know how to explain it, but I want to go there.
Wow.
You know how there's certain is that you'll see the picture and you'll go, oh, that feels so nice, just even to look at the picture. Now, I'm not going to say I get that feeling when I look at the picture of the temple with the rats. I don't feel that way. I feel like home. But when I look at the mountain, and I've always loved being in a mountainous area. I spent a lot of time when I was a kid in Colorado, and I love the mountains. So I'd love to go to Ladakh.
You know, I know exactly that emotion that you feel sometimes. When I see photos of Austria, I think of home. I'm not Austrian. I have no connection to that area, but I think, and I've been there twice, and I've absolutely loved it. And it's so peaceful, the mountains, the Alps. And so I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
Yeah. So I want to get to Ladakh. I don't know when that's going to happen, but I guess maybe if I develop a project that shoots in Ladakh, maybe that would be a good idea.
Or maybe a documentary on the Temple of the Rat, and then maybe you can take a side trip to Ladakh.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I so enjoyed
As soon as we get off the phone, I'm going to look at this video on YouTube about the rat temple, the Karni Mata. I've never even heard of Karni Mata.
If you ever see an interview where Jennifer Beals says she just got back from the Temple of the Rats, you can thank this podcast. We also had Perez Hilton, the noted gossip columnist, and we were talking about places that he'd like to go to. And at the end, you could hear his handler say, this interview is over because of a line of questioning that we were going at. It sounds like almost like they didn't want us to ask about this and time was up. This is what happened when we had Perez Hilton on the show.
I have two places that I've not been to yet that I would love to go to. One is Cambodia, and the other one is Bhutan, and both for similar reasons, which is that neither of those countries yet are very exploited by tourism. I mean, there are tourists that go to those countries, but it's not like Thailand, where it's like just like tourist. It's like Thailand is almost like Cancun, you know?
I've heard that, yes. That's hilarious. Well, have you been to Vietnam?
No, I would love to go there. I would love to travel a ton more. You know, it's just hard now with kids, especially because I've become the cheapest person. Now that I have three children, it's like, how can I make more and spend less? Make more and spend less. Make more and spend less. So, the trip to Israel last year, I feel so blessed. I was able to get that for free. Thank you, Israel. So hopefully I'll get more opportunities like that. You know, in December this year, I think I'm doing something also where a really cool opportunity. We're getting to go somewhere for free in exchange for promotion.
And hey, that's fine.
Being there. So hopefully I get to do that internationally going forward. That'd be great. I could be a family. I am. I'm a family travel vlogger now, so I would love to do more of that.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. Hey, if I can make one suggestion for you, since you want to go to places before spoiled by tourism, I recommend you go to Cuba as soon as possible.
Well, I would love to. I'm Cuban, and my mom was born there, my dad was born there, but I'm afraid to go just because I've been so critical of the Castro brothers, and you know, Raul is still alive, even though he's not in power anymore.
Yeah.
But they're still, you know, not a democratic country, and I'm afraid that they could make something up and put me in jail for any reason. Like, oh, he did this, and it's a total fabrication. Like, it's a real reality.
You know what? That's interesting. I didn't realize that, and I apologize for that question now, but I totally understand what you're saying.
Hey, guys, I am so sorry. We do have to move on.
Okay. Thank you, Perez. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good one.
We actually had to edit that last part out of the interview, so that never made it on of episode 63, so that's kind of a lost clip there, and I really wanted to delve more into his fear of going to Cuba, but the handler never let us finish the interview. Also on our podcast this year, Speaking of things that were a bit controversial, if you live in San Antonio, you know all about the story of Ozzy Osbourne peeing on the Alamo. Well, you've heard the legend, I should say. And we actually had a chance to have Jack Osbourne on the show. Jack, of course, has a TV show where he travels across the United States with his dad. And he was talking about the new season. I had to go all the way back to the first season to talk about when they addressed the issue on episode number one of his road trip show about his trip to San Antonio with his dad, where they went and visited the Alamo after all these years of him supposedly peeing on it.
It was definitely a memorable experience in San Antonio, I'll tell you that.
Let me kind of set the stage for people who don't know. And the only reason I would not have brought this up had you guys not done an episode on this and brought it up yourself. And I thought that was courageous because you could have just glossed over it. But there was a story, and there was a lot of misleading facts about the story, that your dad, Ozzy Osbourne, urinated on the Alamo. That actually did not happen, but he did. He was arrested for public urination, and he urinated on the Cenotaph, which is across the street from the Alamo. It's all part of the same complex.
But the funny thing about that is that we're like, hey, you didn't actually pee on the Alamo. You peed on a war memorial.
Yes. So yeah. Yeah. It's. I know. Yes. It probably is actually worse, but yes. True, I would give that. But you guys actually addressed it and visited the Alamo and learned a lot about the Alamo on your show, and I thought that was so cool that you guys addressed it.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it was funny. Like, that literally was, like, when we were talking, when the show kind of came to, like, when we were developing it, that was the first thing we said we had to do. It's like, we had to go back to the Alamo. We had to do an episode about it, and also my dad's involvement. And it was funny, when we were talking to one of the museum, like, because it's a kind of a museum and, like, it's run by, like, the park services, they turned around and they said, you know, they get more questions about whether my dad peed on the Alamo than they do about the actual events of the Alamo.
And and your dad actually not only apologized years ago, but he actually made a donation to the Daughters of the Republic of Texas, who at the time ran the Alamo. A lot of people don't know that either. So
it's pretty interesting.
I get asked about that all the time in San Antonio, also being from San Antonio. And I wrote a book called San Antonio Uncovered. So people are always asking me about that. And, you know, I always would tell people, you know, it's not because the way it was painted at the time was like he was this huge act of defiance. And it was nothing like that at all.
No, he was literally just apparently, well, as he recalled, walking back to his hotel. He was drunk. He stopped to take a pee.
And an international incident occurred. But since then, also, he's performed in San Antonio, and he's embraced there now, so all is good. So that's it's a kind of a happy ending in a way, and it is in an interesting way, and you can address this, too. Your dad has become a very lovable character.
Yeah, he very much has. You know, I think that the lovable character was always there. Just it was hidden, you know, beneath a vast amount of alcohol.
You can hear our entire interview with Jack Osbourne on episode 67 of Travel with Hawkeye. And by the way, you can find that on travelwithhawkeye.net. We've got them all cataloged there. One of my other favorite celebrities from 2018 was Linda Gray. She starred as Sue Ellen Ewing on the TV show Dallas. And we discussed a little bit about the worldwide impact of this television show, especially behind the Iron Curtain. Let me tell you a little story rather quickly here. I got back from Budapest a few weeks ago. I met a friend there who grew up in Hungary during the communist era. And he said that Dallas was on TV in Hungary on Friday night. And he said that the country shut down when Dallas was on the air. And I'm sure you've heard many stories like that.
I have. And, you know, interesting that you may mention Budapest, because they've just started running Dallas from the very beginning. They're just starting to run it. It's amazing that the country loved it so much that now they just, literally, they invited Patrick and I, we couldn't come, but to come over and sort of launch the whole beginning again. It was a phenomenon.
Well, it's interesting because I have a feeling you've been there before, though, because you pronounced it correctly, and I didn't. You said Budapest. So I'm thinking you're quite the traveler and probably have already been to Hungary.
Quite the traveler. You're so cute. Well, because that's the way you pronounce it. So, you know, you learn. You just travel and you learn. So that's it.
You know, I read the article in Texas Monthly. I don't know if you got a chance to read it because you're quoted in it quite frequently. It's yes. It's an amazing article, and I learned so much about it. Another thing that I learned is, like, in Romania, they put it on TV in Romania because they thought it would show, like, how horrible capitalism is, but actually did the quite opposite. It made people fall in love
Everybody
with American
wanted those cars and
yes.
those clothes and those, you know, everything. They wanted everything. It was wonderful. I loved those stories, those great stories about the wall coming down. So whatever happened, I don't know, but they wanted Dallas lifestyle.
We also got a chance in 2018 to talk to some of our favorite hosts on PBS and the Travel Channel, like Samantha Brown and Rick Steves, and ask them how they got started. And one of my favorite stories that Samantha Brown told me, she was a waitress in New York, and they wanted her to audition for the Travel Channel, and she had to fly down to Jacksonville, and what happened, how she almost missed her interview, and it would have changed her life if she hadn't made it there. And this was her story.
So I had to audition for the Travel Channel, and I lived in New York at the time. I still do. And I had to go down to Jacksonville, Florida for the production company to actually audition there. They were going to put me on tape, and they were going to send that tape to the Travel Channel. The first time I went down to Jacksonville, I missed my connecting flight. It was impossible to make. So they said, hey, we'll just send Travel Channel your reel, which is sort of like a video footage montage of me before, and Travel Channel can use that. And then they came back and said, no, we need to see her audition, and we're going to do the we're going to make our decision in a week. She needs to be seen in a week. So they got me on the exact same flight, and just like the first time, I left late from LaGuardia, New York City, because you always leave late from that airport. And then I had to transfer through Washington Dulles, and if you've ever been to that
yes.
airport, I have never been back since because I had such a traumatic experience there. There is no easy way to get from terminal to terminal. It's like this people mover that looks
yes.
like something out of Star Wars, right?
So I know exactly what you're talking about.
You have to wait 20 minutes for this people mover that goes across the terminal to the next terminal, and then it takes, you know, 10 minutes, and it's just for someone who has 5 minutes to make a flight, you feel like all of your organs are just shutting down because you are sweating and your heart is beating. And I've been waiting on tables in New York City for 8 years, and I was like, I have to get this job. I have to. And so I ran off the people mover, and I got to the gate, and no one's there except the attendant. And I said, is that the flight to Jacksonville? And she goes, yeah, but like I called final boarding 5 minutes ago, but you know, go down, maybe they'll still take you. So I ran down, and it was just one of those like 50 seater jets, real small jet.
Uh-huh.
And so there is no jetway. It's you're now on the tarmac, you're walking out to a plane. So I see a plane and I just start walking towards it. And of course you can't really do that. And a man came up to me and said, where do you think you're going? Who are you? And I said, is that the flight to Jacksonville? And he said, yeah, I'm supposed to be on that flight. And he said, no, you're not. I just called it. I called it. So no one gets on. And he showed me his clipboard, like, I care about that. And he said, no, you can't get on the flight. He shows me his clipboard. And I just started bawling because I had just, it was an emotional roller coaster for the last 2 hours because I knew I was late, you know, leaving LaGuardia.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, you don't understand. I've been waiting on tables for 8 years and I really think I can get this job, but I have to be on that flight. And he was not really amused, but he said, listen, the only other person who can say yes to you is the pilot of the plane. I'll ask him. And if he says yes, you can go. But if he says no, there's no getting on. He said, wait here. So he walks, and the plane is, I don't know, it's like 75, 100 feet away, and he walks up the stairway into that. And I see him go into the cockpit, and he kind of leans down, and the pilot, you know, gives him his ear. And something just snapped. I just said, get on that plane. Mm-hmm. And so I picked up my bag, and I ran. And both men were looking at me, and I put myself under the nose of the plane and just held out my arms and said, please. I just shouted and just held them out. And the pilot gave me a big thumbs up. And literally, that's when I knew I got the job.
You know, I wonder if he knows, if that pilot knows that he started an incredible career for you, or if he was just a passenger.
You know, 10 years ago, for my 10th year anniversary with the Travel Channel, we tried everything we could to locate that pilot.
Oh.
and we could not. It was an airline that had since gone under. I think it was like AirTran or something.
Yeah.
But I mean, listen, we had a lot of information, right? I mean, it was a certain flight. It was a
sure.
You know, just ask the pilots, do they remember this? And but I have tried.
You can hear our entire interview with Samantha Brown, episode 80 of Travel with Hawkeye for 2018. We also got a chance to talk with Rick Steves, probably America's most noted travel expert, and asked him how he got started in this whole travel game.
My parents dragged me to Europe when I was 14 years old, and I remember thinking it was a stupid idea. But I got over there, and it really changed my life. It's just so exciting for us Americans to realize, hey, there's 96% of humanity outside of our borders, and it's great to get out there and meet them in person.
It definitely is. But I think you'll agree, for a lot of people, they don't get to travel. We're so separated from Europe and the rest of the world. And, you know, in Europe, if you want to travel to another country, it doesn't take that much effort compared to what it takes for an American. I think that's one of the reasons we're not a very well-traveled country.
Well, a lot of Americans will go back to their same little, you know, Orlando or Waikiki destination for all their lives. And frankly, I think, you know, those are great places, but they're after a few visits, why don't you try Portugal or Israel or Norway or Ireland or something different? You can get on a plane here and in 12 hours be in Israel.
Yeah.
And go to Jerusalem, and then for half an hour from Jerusalem, you can be in the West Bank in Bethlehem. I was just there, had a great time. I just jumped off of a cruise ship in St. Petersburg to get to know a little bit about Russia. Just have a wonderful time in the Italian Riviera and the great cities of Europe, London, Paris, Rome, Istanbul. There's so much to experience, and I find it, I've been spending 4 months a year for the last 30 years over there researching my guidebooks and leading the tours that we take around and producing our TV shows. And what's amazing to me, or impressive to me, Mark, is that you can never exhaust Europe of what it has to offer.
Oh,
I was just
10
days in Poland, and it was all new to me. You know, Gdansk and Warsaw and Krakow, there is so much to offer over there, and it's surprisingly affordable if you know how, and it's certainly friendly if you're just a good traveler.
You can hear our entire interview with Rick Steves on episode 86 of this year's Travel with Hawkeye. Probably one of my favorite interviews, and definitely the most listened to podcast we had in 2018, was Evelyn Hannon, who is arguably perhaps the very first travel blogger. We could not find anybody who started blogging before she did. She was one of the first to go on the internet after starting a travel newsletter specifically aimed at women who are traveling alone. And this started out in the 80s and in the 90s. And it's kind of interesting because really she is a pioneer. And it was, like I said, one of my favorite interviews, and I asked her how this whole thing started for her. It's quite an amazing story.
Well, it all started with my divorce. I was married when I was very young and divorced when I was still very young. And at that point, I was 42 years old. I had two grown children, and I had never traveled by myself before. And I thought to myself, if I don't get out of the house and if I don't try this, I'm going to be stuck here baking chocolate cakes and not doing anything else. And I actually thought going out into the world on my own, I was going to die. There was that sense, that impending doom. And I forced myself. I said, if you can get out there and travel for 35 days on your own, then that will be a metaphor for the rest of your life. And I had something like $700 in my bank account. And so I called a travel agent and I said, I just want the cheapest ticket to Europe. I don't care where I go, but it has to be the cheapest. And at that point in, it was 1982, it was $200 to fly to Brussels in Belgium.
Okay.
And that's where I went. And everybody said, oh, you're so brave. Oh, that's so wonderful of you. How did you do? I said, well, to tell you the truth, I was away for 35 days. I cried for 35 days.
Really?
But I started to talk to people. I started to ask questions. I started to meander. And slowly but surely, I saw, hey, you're still breathing. You're still okay. Now, it sounds outlandish for females today. But don't forget, this was 1982. Few women were divorcing. It was just the beginning of the divorce revolution. You stayed home with your husband. he was the one that took you on beach holidays or on your honeymoon. And suddenly, here I was out in the world all by myself. And guess what? I survived. And I came home, and I started to think about this. I started to think, you know, people are now inviting me to dinner parties because they want to hear my stories. These are married couples. What's going on? Why has this become such a flashpoint kind of thing? And I started to look for other women who were doing what I was doing. And guess what? There was nothing. There was maybe one book being written in the UK, maybe one or two in the States. Canada, I couldn't find a thing. And I had to make up my own rules as I went along. I had to figure out how to stay safe on my own. And I did it. I did it. And then I started talking to other women and saying, what do you think? Would you like to join me? And by 1994, I created a newsletter, the first newsletter for women travelers. And I started out with 100 people who bought the newsletter.
Evelyn's newsletter eventually became the world's first travel blog called journeywoman.com. And as you can find out if you listen to the whole interview on episode 75, it is not a very sophisticated blog compared to other blogs today, but it definitely is very informative, and it filled a need when there was no one else talking about women traveling alone. She really was a pioneer. And she's got legions and legions of followers and fans. And that's one of the reasons our most listened to episode ever, not just 2018, but ever. And we really thank Evelyn for being part of the show. Now, if you listen to Travel with Hawkeye, you know that we have a lot of travel writers on the show from the New York Times, from different magazines, from various books. And two of my favorite travel writers from 2018 that were on the show, one is Mark Adams. He's actually written a book this year called Tip of the Iceberg. And on episode 62, we talked about that. I was so intrigued by that book, I went and read other books that he had written. And I asked him back 8 weeks later, to talk about his bestseller, Turn Right at Machu Picchu. And just a great writer. And he's not, I love how he says he's a martini explorer. He never was even in the Boy Scouts, and now he's doing all these adventurous things and writing about them, but from his own perspective. And Turn Right at Machu Picchu, I think, is the book you need to read before you travel to Machu Picchu. And I asked him, what is Machu Picchu? I mean, we know what it is. It's in Peru. It's this Incan ruins. But I mean, there's a lot of debate about what it was or what it is. I guess what it was. And this is what Mark told us.
Well, there's two schools of thought in general. You know, the idea that it was the lost city of the Incas has kind of fallen by the wayside. That was Hiram Bingham, the fellow who rediscovered it in 1911. You know, that was his theory, and that was kind of his way of making himself seem more important, more of a world historical figure. In general, it's believed that it was sort of a Camp David of the Inca emperor, where he would go during the summer months, which of course are our winter months in the southern hemisphere. And, you know, he would go there for a few months at a time, and he would bring his whole panaka or extended family there. The more interesting theory, which is put out by the anthropologist and explorer Johann Reinhard, who's the guy who found that Inca mummy on the top of a mountain about 20 years ago, is that Machu Picchu is a sacred center. You know, that there are all these other sites that connect by sight lines and, you know, angles connect, and the sunrise comes up in a particular spot and shines in various places. And so Machu Picchu is sort of this heightened area, very specifically built on this bluff overlooking the Urubamba, which is the sacred river of the Inca Empire. And, you know, to me, that's much more interesting because in that case, the Inca Trail is not just a pretty path that goes up and down some old ruins. You know, it's actually a pilgrimage site that was perhaps even a holy pilgrimage from the Inca, you know, capital city of Cusco to Machu Picchu.
I highly recommend, if you're going to Peru, going to Machu Picchu, to read the book Turn Right at Machu Picchu by Mark Adams. It's a great read. It's a very quick read. It's a very entertaining book, but it not only explains the history of Machu Picchu, but also the story behind how it was discovered, and I use that in air quotes, by an American explorer, and then also Mark's journey to retrace the steps of that American explorer who found it over 100 years ago. If you don't want to read the book, at least listen to episode 70 of Travel with Hawkeye and hear the podcast with Mark Adams. Not as good as the book, but it only takes you about half an hour to go through it. And finally, on today's episode of Moments, Great Moments of 2018, I love this interview so much. Tim Neville writes for a variety of different magazines, and I read an article in Ski Magazine, and I reached out to Tim. I said, I would love to have you on the show. Tim went skiing in North Korea. Yeah, you heard me right, North Korea. And I wanted to find out what it was like to travel to North Korea. So few people have ever done that. And also what it's like to ski in North Korea. This is what we talked to. This is I actually thought that he was invited by the government to go there. And he quickly corrected me.
Just need to correct something there. I was not actually invited by the government. In fact, the government hopefully had no idea that I was there.
Oh, okay. Okay. I stand corrected. Okay.
Yeah, that would have been very sticky for me. In fact, it was probably the most stressful part about that whole trip was you just don't really know who knows what at any certain time. And so you have to go into North Korea with a company, at least at the time. Now you can't, as Americans, you can't go in at all. But at the time, anybody could go really, except for South Koreans. They're not allowed. But you have to go through a company. And so I was very straightforward and told the company what I wanted to do. And at the time, the North Koreans were, they had just launched this luxury ski resort. I noticed that they had let the AP in, Agence France-Presse, they were the BBC. They were letting media in to come cover the skier because it was obviously a point of pride for them. So if people did know that I was there from the government, they were probably okay with that. But yeah, it was a couple years ago.
And your impression of North Korea was very, very interesting. First of all, you spent a few days in the capital of North Korea before you moved out to the ski resort. And just right. Your description of being in the hotel there and how vacant it was. It had 1,000 rooms, I think you said, and about 30 were occupied.
That is true. It was one of the more surreal experiences for sure. It's a place where reality doesn't quite carry the weight that it does for us, let's say, building a 1,000-room hotel. I can't imagine at any point in any time that thing would ever be filled. But, it's a capital city, so they have to have these huge hotels. In fact, there are other hotels there that have been being built for, at least 10 years or so, and they're still not done, and they're not really sure what's going to happen to them. But it is a very very, very interesting experience for sure when you go into a hotel that big and it's so sparsely occupied. It leads to some pretty surreal moments.
If you want to hear our entire interview with Tim Neville, that's episode 44 of Travel with Hawkeye. And if any of these episodes struck your fancy, you want to hear them all again, and you forgot what number it was, you don't want to go find it, go to our website, travelwithhawkeye.net. The whole library is listed there. You can find everything pretty easily. We want to thank all the guests we've had in this past year, the celebrities, the travel writers, the travel hosts. We've had just a great year. Our staff did an incredible job putting together this season of Travel with Hawkeye. We start season number 3 next week. We're very excited about it. But most of all, the people we want to thank, it's you who've been listening to this podcast. We doubled our subscribers in 2018. It's been an incredible year. If you could do me one small favor, if you've listened to the end of this podcast, obviously you're a fan. If you could tell one fellow traveler about podcasting in general, because a lot of people still don't even know about it, and then about our podcast, I would greatly appreciate it. Thank you very much for making us part of your travel experience. We'll see you in 2019, starting next week with season number 3 of the Travel with Hawkeye podcast. I'm Mark Hawkeye Lewis, Travel with Hawkeye's podcast host. Remember, the world is out there. Your adventure awaits.